A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Across the UK, online and on DAB Digital Radio. Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2. All the action, excitement and drama from across the entire women's game, including the Women's Super League.
Cleared off the line by Steph Horton.
The UEFA Women's Champions League and the Euro 2021 qualifiers.
Lana Clellan striking from outside the penalty area.
World-beating big match conversation on the station that's raising the game for women's football.
And she scored!
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2.
Welcome to a very special edition of Women's Football Weekly on International Women's Day. We have 2 hours of women's football conversation coming up with fantastic guests from across the women's game joining us. First, though, let's have a look at the headlines. Chelsea cap off a brilliant week with a commanding victory over West Ham.
England peels away. Able to get a decent cross in for Kerr. It's Chelsea who lead inside 7 minutes.
Manchester City wait patiently to get all 3 points against Everton.
Kieran Walsh, she's got it! Oh, it's a smashing goal!
Plus, in a special second hour of the show, we'll be discussing the challenges and opportunities facing the women's game.
We sort of had brands who were really interested in collaborating, but it was only for that month. And we were thinking, well, actually, women's football isn't a fad. We're not going to be here for a month and then disappear.
We've got a packed lineup for you, including Arsenal and Scotland defender Jem Beattie, Brighton manager and former England head coach Hope Powell, Brighton CEO Paul Barber, Sheffield United's Courtney Sweetman-Kirk, and Manchester City midfielder and World Cup winner Sam Mewis. This is Women's Football Weekly, National Radio's only dedicated women's football show.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers.
Hi, I'm Leah Williamson from Arsenal Women, and you can follow the WSL on TalkSport 2.
Hello, team. Happy Monday. How are you all doing? Thank you so much for joining us. Should be a really awesome show, fingers crossed, that we have in store for you today. So much to talk about. We're going to be covering the Barclays FA WSL and Championship as usual, but a little bit different this week because we're here for 2 hours till 8 o'clock tonight, and we're going to be looking at the wider game, the future of grassroots women's football, the fans at the forefront of growing the sport, and the technology as well that's transforming women's football. First of all, though, I've got two cracking guests to open us up. Delighted to have Arsenal and Scotland's Jem Beattie with us, making her Women's Football Weekly debut. How are you doing, Jen?
I'm doing well, thanks, Faye. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Almost part of the furniture as well. Molly Hudson from The Times. Not with us for long, though, Moll, are you? Monday night game.
Busy, busy night, isn't it? International Women's Day. Lovely to speak to you on International Women's Day.
Yes, yes, and you. Although every day is International Women's Day for us, as far as we're concerned. And listen, before we catch up on all the news from the week, you know, this is a day which gives us time to challenge inequality, call out bias, question stereotypes, and address all forms of gender inequality, as well as celebrating the achievements, the bravery and all-round awesomeness of amazing women around the world. Now, as I said, we do that all the time here on Women's Football Weekly, so this is just a normal day for us. But we're also very grateful and privileged to be given 2 hours to talk about the things that we love to talk about here on Women's Football Weekly, and have a little bit of space and time to be able to do it as well. And I'm really privileged to have Jem Beattie with us to discuss what's been a really really, really tough 6 months for her after she was diagnosed with breast cancer back in October. I mean, Jen, we've not spoken to you since. You've had a few chats. You've obviously been going through treatment. First and foremost, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling really good, actually. Thanks for asking. Like you said, it has been a really, really tricky few months for me personally, as obviously everyone's going through different stuff right now. But yeah, no, I finished treatment just before Christmas, actually. So that was a nice sort of way to sort of see the end of that year and just kind of almost put it behind me. But I was very glad to sort of get treatment done and sort of start fresh coming into 2021 and just get back to football, to be honest. That's obviously my first love, so it's been amazing being able to train and play as much as I can throughout treatment, but also just getting back to football, really.
I mean, training through treatment is pretty impressive in itself, but, you know, did it feel like a little bit of an outlet for you, a bit of normality?
Oh, 100%. I can, you know, at the start of radiotherapy, when they actually offered me exercise classes. So when I kind of turned around and said, look, I play football as my job, they kind of said, right, okay, you might be fine. But no, totally. I think from a physical perspective, it definitely helped the fatigue side of stuff, ironically. But even more so from a mental perspective, just being able to go into football and switch off from health things for a couple of hours every day was a huge outlet for me. And, you know, thankfully the club and the girls were so supportive as well. So I felt in a really, really safe place.
Mm. Molly?
Hi, Jen. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about, I guess, the decision to come out and tell everyone that you had received that diagnosis, because I lost my mum to cancer last year, and I think it was just a really powerful thing to do. It must have been quite scary knowing that you were playing and still sort of being involved in the game while you were revealing something so personal, I suppose.
Gosh, Molly, I'm really, really sorry to hear that about your mum. But yeah, no, for me, I have friends that work in the NHS, and kind of just, like, to be honest, really early on in my diagnosis, there was no way I was ready to speak out about it. For me, it was a huge, hugely emotional time, and I was up and down like a yo-yo. You know, I wasn't necessarily ready to, but when I kind of, I guess, got through the really hard stages, because it was very much so a learning process for me. There were so many tests and things I had to go through to kind of get through the initial stage. But for me, like I said, I have friends that works in the NHS, and they said that because of COVID and all these things surrounding that, there was so much anxiety for people going in to get checked that the actual number of cancers being diagnosed had gone down hugely last year. So that for me was kind of like, okay, I knew I had to sort of use the platform that we all have in this women's football world and speak out and just kind of, I think to emphasize this, it was never really about me. It was, yes, I was sharing my experience, but the whole point was to help other people and to make sure that, you know, you can go in and get things checked and share my experience that hospitals were completely safe. You know, everyone was following regulations and that it was okay to do so. So that was definitely the changing point for me.
Aside from how supportive the whole football community have been with you naturally, it was really lovely to sort of scroll on Twitter and see people saying that maybe they'd gone and got checked out because of your story and you sort of saying it publicly. I suppose that must have been another positive for you to know that people had maybe heard your story and then gone and got themselves checked.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, on when the interview did come out, I think it was December 12th, I think, if I remember correctly, the amount of support that people showed within women's football and without, you know, outside of women's football as well, was just honestly incredible. It was overwhelming, to say the least. But the main messages I got, you know, from people for days after, weeks after, saying, you know what, I've booked a GP appointment, I'm off to go and get something checked, I've been sitting on a few symptoms and haven't quite had the courage to do so. That to me meant absolutely everything. So that was the whole point of doing it. And you know, fingers crossed everyone was fine and stuff, but to get those messages to say that I'd kind of attempted to be a little bit impactful, and it had kind of, you know, gone in the right direction. It was a bittersweet moment, obviously, in so many ways, but to get those messages was what definitely meant the most.
Because that's what is key, Jen, isn't it? Is awareness a lot of the time, and many people just aren't aware until somebody in the public eye, like yourself, is going through it, and then they start to open up and think, oh, actually, maybe I do need to check on this, because we all think we're immune, don't we? We can all just go about our daily lives thinking it doesn't touch us, but it doesn't matter who you are, it's completely indiscriminate, this disgusting disease, and it reaches, unfortunately, far too many people. And I know with the awareness that you've been raising, you've been working with Scottish Power as well, who are doing some incredible work. I mean, I can't believe they've raised £30 million for Cancer Research UK, which is just incredible.
Absolutely. I think they teamed up with Cancer Research in 2012. So to do that in, you know, such a short space of time, and especially last year, you know, when they couldn't hold all the sort of normal events that they were used to hit that milestone, is just incredible. And, you know, the what that will go towards in terms of research is, you know, we're just trying to find a cure. And the level of treatment that I received, knowing that how much that had come on over the years, knowing that that can still improve, is just, you know, that's why companies like Scottish Power are doing such an amazing thing, that's what, you know, we're trying to make people's lives better.
Yeah, it's a collective, isn't it? My producer Flo has just reminded me, actually, and I remember her telling me this at the time, when you came out and told everyone what you were going through, she actually went and got a lump checked, and it came back all fine. She's A-okay. Gives a thumbs up across the screen at the moment, but says a massive thank you, because that's so crucial, getting these kind of early diagnoses and you know, the kind of stuff that Cancer Research are able to do. They've kind of been at the real heart of progress that's already seen survival in the UK double in the last 40 years because of the work they're doing, which is amazing.
Totally. I think, you know, on one hand, yes, go and get checked and you might be absolutely fine, but the key for early diagnosis, the difference in that is just huge. And like you say, I think it's 2 in 4 people survive the cancer now, like, for a very, very long time. And those numbers just, you know, they'll get better and better over time. And it's crazy amounts of money, like 30 million, that will help that cause. And it's, yeah, I can only speak from my experience that the level of treatment I received from down here in London was just incredible. And I was like, medics are just incredible people, you know, emotionally and scientifically, with what they know now and what they can do. And with Scottish Power coming on board and raising awareness and doing all these amazing things, it's, you know, hopefully we'll just get better and better.
Yeah, fingers crossed for sure. And I'm so glad you're feeling better. And thank you again from everybody listening on Women's Football Weekly for sharing your story, because it is so important that people realise what they can do and what's going on behind the scenes for people. And, you know, life is not as easy as it might think. You might think it's glamorous playing football, being on the radio, whatever, but everybody's got something going on behind the scenes. And it's incredible that you've decided to come out and tell everybody to try and help people. So thank you for that, Jen. Right, coming up, we're going to be a bit of a gear change, I'm afraid, but probably a good thing. We're going to be discussing yesterday's action in the WSL and, of course, talking to Jen about Arsenal's win.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app and on your smart speaker. Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the home for women's football.
This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the only show on national radio dedicated to women's football, with Faye Carruthers, Arsenal and Scotland's Jen Beattie, and Molly Hudson from The Times. Don't forget, if you do miss any of our shows or you want to listen again, our podcast is available on the TalkSport app. So download it today and go to our podcast section. And don't forget, we are here until 8 o'clock tonight. It's a 2-hour International Women's Day special. Right, it was a packed Barclays FA WSL schedule this weekend, including Jen Beattie's Arsenal against Birmingham. And here's how it sounded.
England peels away. Able to get a decent cross in for Kerr. It's Chelsea who lead inside 7 minutes. A powerful header from Sam Kerr.
Harris inside the 18-yard box. Lays it out to the left-hand side. A chip into the 18-yard box. Sam gets a head to it. And the captain makes it 3-0. Cross in from the right-hand side. Found the head of Katie Zellum.
Miedema. Miedema making room. Miedema! Well, you knew she was going to score at some point. Missed a few chances in the first half, hit the post. But Viviane Miedema finally scores her first goal against Birmingham City.
Drops to Kagman on the half volley. Sweet finish by the Dutchwoman and into the back of the net. Brighton take the lead. A really smart strike by Inessa Kagman. Kira Walsh, she's got it! Oh, it's a smashing goal. He just knew as soon as it had left her foot, it was destined for the back of the net.
Love a bit of Fleur East. Producer Flo coming out with all the tunes on a Monday night. Wonderful stuff. Right, let's start with the early kickoff, shall we? I have Arsenal's Jem Beattie and Molly Hudson from The Times with me on Women's Football Weekly. Manchester United 3, Aston Villa 0. And Casey Stoney's injury-depleted side showed exactly why they're in the driving seat for that last Champions League spot at the moment. I'm sure Jem will have something to say about that with the controlling win over Aston Villa. Goals from Hansen, Sigsworth and Katie Zellum. Lucy Staniforth as well, outstanding for United. She got an assist. She's obviously been out for a lot of this season through injury, and it leaves Manchester United 6 points now behind Chelsea. It was quite a dominant performance, wasn't it, Jen?
No, it was. And you know, we're talking about Champions League here, and hopefully, you know, we'll be able to tip that third place spot. But yeah, no, to have the performance they did, missing the sort of key players, is a testament to them as a squad and what Casey Stoney's doing.
Yeah, you've got a game in hand over them, but 6 points outside the top three at the moment. But I mean, we've seen what Manchester City have done this season after being way off the pace early doors. Do you feel like you can catch that up?
Yeah, no, 100%. I think we have to just, that's our focus right now. And that is honestly what everybody is talking about. Everyone's talking about Champions League and what it means to us as a club and players, and how we're all desperate to be back into it. But, you know, it's the old cliche, we have to just take it one game at a time. But that is, it's just going to be a race to the end of the season. And, you know, I really do think that game against each other, against United, will be a big fixture of this season. But yeah, look, I think a lot of us would probably say that we haven't performed well enough against the top teams. And, you know, even that United away fixture for us, you know, we were so below par. But we've got the rest of the season to put it right, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed for you for that. Molly, United just continuing to be dominant, aren't they? By the way, match is on Friday, the 19th of March, a 6:30 kickoff, but it's at home after United beat Arsenal 1-0 back in November. Molly Hudson, Manchester United at the moment, they're just doing it consistently, I think would be the best thing to say.
Yeah, and I think maybe what is the most impressive is the fact that, as you mentioned, they have been hit by injuries. I think a few of us were laughing. It's sort of like Arsenal have seemed to be just about getting through the injury curse, and now it's moved on to Manchester United. And I think, you know, you look at that Aston Villa game, and obviously Marcus Bignot's come in there and have sort of shored them up. They're a lot more of a defensive side now, maybe a little bit harder to beat. And I think it was really impressive to see, particularly the two first half goals, to give them that confidence. So important to get an early-ish goal against Aston Villa. And I think that's what's been impressive. Sort of all of the top four this weekend kind of played well, got the wins. And it's just, it feels like we're just sort of building up and building up to the Manchester United-Arsenal game, and also the City-Chelsea game that may well decide the title now as well.
So it just makes it so much more exciting, doesn't it, this season, that there are three Champions League places and four teams vying for that. For such a long time, we just had two Champions League places and just the three teams. But actually, you know, you could argue Everton, although they've slipped away a little bit, you know, in any normal season, had they not been hit by so many bad injuries around Christmas time, we could have had five teams pushing for that top three space, which is fantastic. Fantastic. Arsenal, though, did score four against Birmingham City, so one more than Manchester United managed. It was another Birmingham game that moved to St George's Park, though. Carla Ward almost writing off this result for Birmingham, another heavy defeat to one of the big sides. But she says she's looking ahead to games like Everton, Bristol City, for example, as the real priority. Joe Montemuro, though, said he finally found the long-awaited rhythm that had been lost in the last few weeks. Do you feel as if that's the case, Jen?
I mean, yeah, I would say so. I think momentum is huge, especially in these leagues right now. But, you know, it's a testament to the league and the teams and how competitive it actually is. I mean, you said yourself, there's obviously three Champions League spots, but four or five teams can be aiming for that. And you couldn't have said that a few seasons ago. So, you know, every game is just as big as each other. And that's a testament, again, to the clubs and how much everyone's improved. But no, I think I would agree with Joe 100%. Momentum is huge in football. And, you know, to get that good feeling around the squad, I think we went from losing City and Chelsea back to back. And that is something that we're not necessarily used to as players or as a club. So to get back to sort of winning ways is just, it's great for the dressing room, for the feel of the club, and just to continue that for the rest of the season is what the aim is.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a strange season for everyone, hasn't it? But 28 shots. Vivian Miedema as well. This amused me. I hadn't realised she'd never scored against Birmingham City before. She ended the curse as well. Two goals from Caitlin Ford, a goal from Lisa Evans as well. And you were just really dominant in this. It felt as if this was the Arsenal of old, Molly.
Yeah, it was difficult for Birmingham when we were speaking to Carla Ward after the game. She was sort of like, God, I've played the last two games against Manchester City and Arsenal on a pitch that's basically as wide as Wembley. couldn't have had sort of worse opponents. Yeah, I think definitely sort of agree with what Joe and Jen have said, really. The rhythm feels so important for Arsenal, and it's a bit of a shame that when we're speaking to Joe after the game, he sort of suggested that maybe they wouldn't be able to get the West Ham game played. That obviously was postponed earlier in the season. Would like to get that played before United, just to get another game in the bag, more minutes, more sort of match fitness, because there's been a few players that have come back from injuries. But it seems as though now maybe they won't be able to fit that in. I think it's down to the FA to make that decision. So if you're looking at sort of 12 days without a fixture, it's a bit of a shame, because obviously that rhythm and that momentum is really building up to give Arsenal the best chance, I suppose, of coming from behind. Six points behind feels a long way, but when you think they've got to play United and they've had so many games postponed, it really is a close fight, I think. It could go either way.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it, at the moment? Just before, because I know Jen's got to leave us at 6:30, so I just want to have a quick chat about the news that broke this week, that the FA has confirmed the FA Cup will return on the 31st of March. That's really important, Molly, isn't it?
Yeah, hugely important. I think it sort of, there was so much uncertainty, wasn't there, because so much of the lower league teams were reliant on the kind of general situation with the pandemic in society. So it's really good to see that there are at least dates now, there's dates in the calendar, and you just have to hope that it's not too much of a difficulty for those teams that haven't been training and playing to kind of get themselves ready for these games, because, you know, when you think of the difficulties in having a sort of giant killing cup run in women's football anyway, when there's quite big gaps within divisions, this season it's going to be even harder, because you look at the amount of time they've actually had where they haven't even been able to train as a team. So can only hope that all of those players have stayed, you know, safe and well and fit and healthy and are able to really enjoy this cup run.
Yeah, Arsenal 14-time winners of this title, Jen. How pleased are you that the competition's able to return?
Yeah, hugely. I mean, you know, who doesn't love playing in the FA Cup? It's one of the most exciting tournaments of the season. So to see it be confirmed, I think, was great to see. And I guess it just adds another fixture to our diaries, which is always a great thing. So, but I think, like what Molly said, I think you just want it to be a fair tournament. So you know, looking forward to having some extra games, and, you know, it's another opportunity to win a trophy, and I think that's what everyone would want at the end of the day.
Certainly. And listen, good luck for the rest of the season as well. Hopefully we'll catch up with you again before it all ends, but it's been a pleasure having you on. Well done on your debut for Women's Football Weekly. I hope you enjoyed it and we'll come back.
Loved it. Thanks very much for having me, Faye. Appreciate
Brilliant.
It.
Take care. See you, Jen.
Thank you.
Okay, me and Molly Hudson with you next. This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. We're going to be chatting next to Brighton Chief Executive and Women in Football Board Member Paul Barber.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app and on your smart speaker.
Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the home for women's football.
You are listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faker Ruthers, and keeping you company with me is Molly Hudson from The Times. Now then, we want to talk about amazing things going on in the women's game. And who better to talk to about that than Paul Barber, Chief Executive of Brighton and Hove Albion, talking about being a leading force in women's football, for sure, with amazing things going on at the training ground and always so much support for the women's team. Evening, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm very good, Faye. How are you?
I'm very good. I just want to apologise for the confusion over the times. Completely my fault. Not used to having a two-hour show. So I appreciate you being incredibly flexible as always and coming on to chat with us.
No problem at all.
So, I mean, many people don't really know exactly what goes on behind the scenes at a football club. And what Brighton have been doing over the years, showing such a big commitment to women's football, investing in facilities, having both the men's and women's teams training on the same site. It's so important to let people know how that came about and why exactly you wanted to invest in the women's game.
Well, first of all, I think it's very important that we recognise that there's a huge number of women and girls that love football just as much as men and boys. And we wanted to make sure that women and girls had the same opportunity to be part of our club as men and boys. So I think that was the first point. The second point, we already had a women's team playing in the lower levels, albeit not particularly supported in terms of facilities or infrastructure or budget. And we wanted to change that and to try and create a level playing field for our women and girls football setup as much as the men and the boys, even though it's a long-term investment. We know that at the moment the revenues in the women's game are nowhere near as high as the men's game, but we're in this for the long term. And we felt it was important to make sure that to give our women and girls teams the best chance of success, that we provided them with the best possible facilities. So we're in the process now of building a women and girls facility at our training ground, where we'll integrate all of our professional football on one site. It will give them access to their own dining room, their own gym, changing facilities, and all of the things that go into preparing a top-level team to play and recover from matches. And, of course, we're now competing in the Women's Super League, and the women are progressing every season that we're playing at that level and getting better and better in terms of our competitiveness, but we're up against them.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Very stiff competition, as you know.
Molly? Sorry, there's a bit of a delay on the line, Paul. Bear with us. I'll jump in because I don't think Molly's there. I know that the ambition initially was to be a top four club within the FAWSL. You talk about the competition and what other clubs are doing. There seems to be so much money being thrown around, particularly by the bigger clubs at the minute. How are you going to go about achieving that over the next few years? And is there a timeline?
Well, first of all, it's a long-term ambition. And, you know, long-term ambitions, by definition, mean that you have to build over a long period. You have to invest in our model. You have to invest in facilities and infrastructure and people. We've got one of the top women's coaches in the world in Hope Powell, former England head coach, who is steering our team through the development stages that they're going through. And you also have to sort of take a view in terms of the future of how you're going to fund the women's game. In our case, we're putting as much money into youth development for the girls as we would for the boys. Again, looking to develop our own players so that we can compete with the clubs that have much bigger budgets, the Manchester Cities, the Chelseas, the Arsenals of this world. And hopefully by a combination of good recruitment at a senior level, development of our own talent, hiring the best coaches we can, putting the women's team and the girls' teams into the best facilities, we will get a return on that over time. But it is a long-term thing. It's not something that we expect to happen over the next season or two. Although we're making good progress and we've had good results in recent weeks, we see it very much as a long-term objective, just as much as it is with our men's team. You know, we've come a long way as a football club in the last 10 years. We know that we've got a hell of a lot longer way to go to compete in the Premier League for men, and the same is true for women as well.
But all the right steps being taken, which is the crucial part of it. I think Molly's back with us. Molly, you had a question.
Hi, Paul. I know you were saying when we spoke to you, I think earlier on in the summer or maybe even first lockdown, about the fact that the women's hub was something that you were really excited to get involved with, but it, obviously construction had been paused because of the pandemic. I just wondered how that had impacted the plans for the club, but also how important it is for Brighton to continue that development and to be a leading sort of team in the women's game despite the pandemic. It's something that's really important to Brighton.
It is, yeah. I mean, the pandemic has obviously cost us a huge amount of money, like it has every other football club and many other businesses up and down the country. But we felt that it was important to keep our long-term plans on track. And a big part of that is the Women and Girls facility. So as soon as the government allowed construction to start up again, which was soon after the first lockdown, in fairness, we were able to get our contractors back on site, continue the work, obviously complying with all the various COVID protocols that you'd expect. But one of the advantages of this being a separate building was it's away from the main men's first team building and the academy buildings. So we were able to get on with the work, you know, pretty much uninterrupted. And it has allowed us to keep the project on track, and we should be opening on time during this coming summer, which we're obviously very excited about.
That's brilliant stuff. And the Amex as well, hosting three matches in the UEFA Women's Euro 2022 Championship as well, is going to be great for you.
Really good. And, you know, I think, you know, our commitment to women and girls football, as I said, first and foremost, is about the sport and making sure there's an equal opportunity for both sexes to take part in football at every level within our club. And the second part of it, of course, is for the community and the opportunity to create an aspirational pathway for young girls to come into the game, and hopefully by staging matches in the Euros, we'll be inspiring young girls to want to watch football, get involved in football, play football, perhaps even at some stage in the future work in football, which is an important part of our commitment as well. And so we're doing as much as we can to promote the development of women within our club in the administrative side of the game as well as the sporting side. And staging matches in major tournaments is aspirational. It's something that people can look forward to, whether they're Brighton fans or not. They come to experience our stadium and the way we do things. And then hopefully, you know, not only can we inspire a new generation of female players, but we can also inspire a new generation of fans for our club as well.
It's so crucial. That accessibility and that visibility is absolutely massive. Just kind of wrapping into that and final question for you, Paul, because you joined the board of Women in Football last year, and Brighton have become the first corporate member of the organisation as well. And bearing everything you've said in mind, I presume that importance of working alongside them is to increase the number of women working in the industry as a whole, and just showing that path is there.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's really important for women working in the game that they understand that there are no glass ceilings as far as we're concerned, that there's absolutely no reason whatsoever that women can't achieve their full potential working in what has been traditionally a male-dominated sport. It's changing rapidly, and rightly so. And so joining Women in Football as a corporate member has given us an opportunity and a framework for the women that work in our club to, first of all, network with other women also working in football, not just in this country but overseas, benefit from the various training programs that Women in Football offer and could support our club in delivering, and just generally open people's eyes to the fact that actually there is a growing acceptance that women in football can progress to very, very high levels. Just as you see up and down the Premier League now, there are a number of very, very talented and knowledgeable women running Premier League clubs. There's absolutely no reason why any girl who wants to start becoming involved in football and ultimately work in football can't achieve the same as the likes of Karen at Brady at West Ham and Susan Whelan at Leicester and Deves Barrett-Baxendale at Everton. You know, these women are inspirational. And Women in Football's chairman, Ebru Kogsu, was also a chief executive of a major club in European football as well. So there are lots of good role models out there. And I think a combination of setting the right example from a sporting point of view, but also making sure there's an appropriate framework for women to progress in the game from an administrative point of view, gives us the best chance of growing the game of women's football as a whole.
Absolutely. And what a perfect note to end on. Thank you so much for joining us, Paul. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure, Faye. No problem at all.
Take care. Paul Barber there, Chief Executive of Brighton and Hove Albion, doing wonderful stuff behind the scenes that we don't get to talk about and celebrate very often here on Women's Football Weekly. And it's a delight to be able to let you know exactly the good work that's going on there. And by the way, we will be speaking to Brighton manager Hope Powell coming up from 7 o'clock with us for a whole hour, talking about all things Brighton, all things England, Team GB as well, all sorts of things. And speaking about Team GB, bearing in mind Hope Powell took Team GB to the Olympics back in 2012, Molly Hudson. 11 a.m. on Wednesday is the time that we're finally going to hear who will lead Team GB at the Tokyo Olympics. Do we have any steer on who it might be?
Yes, I think it's quite likely, understand that it will be, Hege Riise. And I think a lot of that discussion has been held quite closely with the players following the February camp that obviously Hege led, and Baroness Sue Campbell, who's obviously the FA head of women's football, was quite open in the fact that it would be really open dialogue with the players after that camp, how they found it. And certainly from when we've spoken to the players, they gave sort of glowing reports of the whole camp. Obviously the game went really well as well, beating Northern Ireland. So it feels like that camp was just really positive, and it felt like that was the right way forward for the Team GB tournament, which is obviously rapidly approaching now.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because obviously we spoke to Hege Riise during that camp, and it very much seemed when we spoke to the players after that win over Northern Ireland that that they were really happy with how the camp had gone. And clearly, bearing in mind a lot of these players are experienced England internationals, many of them will be going out to the Olympics. You know, their opinion is crucial, really.
Yeah, and I think particularly when you have players that are so experienced in that squad now, you know, the likes of Steph Horton, Jill Scott, Lucy Bronze, you know, they're real leaders, and they'll be sort of quite clear on how the camp has gone, and it just felt a really good, positive environment. As I say, certainly from what we experienced as media and on the pitch, it seemed to go well as well. There was some signs of Riise's kind of style and the way they want to play, pressing a little bit higher up the field, and certainly seemed to suit Ellen White, who obviously got a hat-trick in that friendly. So I think it's nice to just sort of have it announced. Obviously, it'll be announced on Wednesday, because it's just been ever since there was rumours about Phil Neville obviously leaving, just seems to have gone on a little bit, doesn't it? And it's nice to finally now be like, right, Hege Riise, manager. Now we can actually look to the tournament and be really excited about this.
Yeah, that's the thing. We haven't actually been able to talk about how the squad's going to look. 23 players, really difficult to do that. Are we going to get any of the other home nations involved, or is it purely going to end up being England players? We just haven't actually been able to talk about the football, as you say, and that's what we all want to talk about. How are they going to approach this when they've not really had any proper competitive matches in a year?
Yeah, of course. And I think it's a particular, I know we've spoken about it before, but it's a particular difficult Team GB, that it's not just England. Obviously, it's other players that, that will be incorporated into that team as well. So it's really important to get that balance right, to maximise all of the lead-up camps and hopefully warm-up games there will be. So I think it's, yeah, it's definitely a step in the right direction. And as you say now, just exciting to actually focus on the football and focus on what hopefully, you know, Team GB have got a good chance of getting a medal.
It certainly is. Well, listen, I thought you were going to be focusing on the football tonight because Bristol City play Reading. It's an 8:15 kickoff. We were going to speak to Farrah Williams today. She's not going to be available because that game was moved. I thought that's why Molly was leaving us early, but it turns out you're actually going on an International Women's Day panel and ditching us for that instead. Tell us what it is, Mom.
It's with the Westmorland FA, so we've got the Blackburn Rovers manager and also Rihanna Jarrett, actually, who plays for Brighton. So, yeah, it should be really good, really exciting. It's a real celebration of International Women's Day and women that are being so inspirational in our career.
Wonderful stuff. Well, enjoy, and we shall speak to you, no doubt, very soon. Cheers, Molly.
Thank you.
Molly Hudson there from The Times. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers. Next up, we're going to be hearing from World Cup winner and Manchester City midfielder Sam Lewis.
TalkSport 2, official broadcast partner of the Premier League.
Listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the UK's only national radio show dedicated to women's football. I'm Faye Carruthers and we're actually with you until 8 o'clock tonight. It's a two-hour International Women's Day special celebrating the amazing things going on in women's football at the moment and the people who are the driving force behind it. If you do miss any of this show, you can catch up by downloading the TalkSport app and subscribing to our podcast. You just need to search TalkSport and Women's Football Weekly. Now, we're going to go back to the Barclays FA WSL. We discussed a couple of results with Arsenal's Jem Beattie earlier on. West Ham 0, Chelsea 2. And actually, I'm going to bring in Women's Football Weekly producer, reporter and awesome music selector Flo Lloyd-Hughes with us because she was at this game. How did it go, Flo?
Yeah, I mean, I actually really changed my mind about West Ham, to be honest. I'd looked at their results this season, watched some of their games and highlights and had been quite worried. But I think I was actually quite impressed with how they played. Extremely physical, extremely fit and athletic. And I think they're giving themselves a really good fighting chance. I think the real difference between them and Bristol City is they just don't have a consistent, reliable goal scorer. With Ebony Salmon, Bristol City know that 9 times out of 10, she's going to finish an opportunity that comes her way, and that's really what West Ham are missing. But I think the atmosphere within the squad is good, and I think that is what they can hold on to, because it was all smiles yesterday. You know, obviously they were disappointed to lose, but in the warm-up there was laughter and smiles. They looked relaxed. It wasn't like a tense team that's fighting for relegation that you often see.
Oh, that's interesting, because it's so tight down the bottom. Bristol City at the foot of the table with 6 points. West Ham just 2 points above them on 8, and Aston Villa 2 points above them on 10. Probably bring Birmingham into that as well on 11, and Tottenham quite precarious on 12 points. It's very, 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 very tight. Let's hear from the West Ham boss, Ollie Harder, shall we? He believes all the hard work will eventually pay off.
You know, we haven't been sitting on our hands. It's been double sessions for 3 weeks. You know, I think we put in about 25 sessions between the end until now, before the break. And the girls have responded well to that, and you know, they've really pushed. And at the end of the day, it's a little bit momentum. You know, the train hasn't left the station, and it's always the hardest thing to get the wheels moving. And for us, once the wheels start moving a little bit, and you know, you get the goals and so on, then I can see a bright future for us.
Well, they're going to need that bright future to come pretty quickly if they want to survive in the WSL. But as Flo says, it looks like, you know, they potentially could have the edge over Bristol City. We'll certainly see some important games coming up. Chelsea, though, Flo, still a point above Manchester City.
Yeah, two points. I think they are above Man City. But yeah, they just look so dominant. And I think it was interesting how few changes Emma Hayes made, given the result midweek really looked quite exhausting for all of them. She did make a couple of changes. A debut for Zazira Musovic, who came in January. She's only 24. She looked pretty confident yesterday. And they've got that return leg on Wednesday. So I think it's interesting how Emma Hayes didn't seem too worried about the fitness and the ability of her side. She put out a very strong side against a relegation threatened team. So it was interesting how confident she was.
Yeah, very interesting. 2 points, sorry, I can't count. 41 to 39. It's not difficult, is it? It's not as if I did get a GCSE in maths a very long time ago. Right, Manchester City 1, Everton 0. They left it late, City, but eventually managed to break through. Ciara Walsh scoring from a long-range effort in the 81st minute. So 2 points behind Chelsea, City are. And by the way, I think I said to Sam Mewis in this interview, which you're about to hear, that it was 1 point. So again, I clearly can't count in this one either, so apologies for that. But I did catch up with the Manchester City and US Women's National Team star Sam Mewis to talk about, first and foremost, her move to the WSL.
Yeah, it was a bit of a whirlwind, I guess, but kind of a, like, I feel like at the time, like, so little was going on that it was a move across. It was just like a lot happening at once when I had been used to so little happening. But it's been great. I mean, I've had such a great experience here so far, and I have only good things to say about Man City and my time here. I feel really fortunate that I got that opportunity to come and play in such a great league and for such a great club at a time where there wasn't a lot of soccer going on. It's been an overwhelmingly positive experience.
And can you see the difference that the WSL has now, you know, attracting international talent from all around the world? It's such a huge league globally now.
Definitely. Yeah. I think that kind of investment and that kind of attention in the women's game, it's so positive, and it's something I'm so excited to be a part of. And I just think that the league is growing, and women's soccer globally is growing. I think you can see in a lot of leagues, including the NWSL in the US, that there's so many positive things happening. So I'm just excited for the game as a whole.
Yeah, you have clicked and gelled. And as you say, 5 goals for you now, 1 assist this season as well. We won't talk about the miss over against Everton at the weekend. But, you know, you've really slotted into this league quite seamlessly and made a real difference to a Manchester City side that already was full of talented players. What's it been like slotting in, and what have your teammates been like?
Yeah, it's been such a great learning experience for me. I think that I have so many areas I want to improve in, and getting to train and play with some of the women that are on this team has been so eye-opening for me. I feel like I have a lot to learn from all of my teammates and from the staff as well. And it's been so great to get to kind of learn the style of play here and learn how that fits into the culture. And I've just been really trying to absorb as much information and as much knowledge as I can from everybody. It's really been just such a great experience for me overall. And I feel like I'm just trying to learn and grow from it as much as I can.
Have you been able to help Manchester City, obviously with your experience out in the USA, where the women's game is so much further advanced than it is here? Have you been able to give them advice? I know you're involved with their Same Goals campaign, which is designed to help girls access football. But are your how helpful are your experiences that you've had in the States translating over here?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that on the field, I think that, like, Rose and I maybe have brought some of our like American qualities, and maybe that's been interesting for some of the girls to see how we approach the game. But I think overall, I'm the one who's been learning the most. I feel like just the standard of tactical and technical ability here is something that I need to try to keep up with. It's just really good. And even the young players have such an awareness of the game and are so technically savvy. So I definitely am constantly being challenged in those areas. And I think off the field, it's a good question. I think I would like to have an impact. Just finding those opportunities to do so and to discuss these sorts of things with the players and the organization is something that would be a good opportunity and that I should try to do.
Yeah, definitely, because I feel as if we can learn so much from you going ahead. And when you look at the impressive thing that the USWNT have done in terms of equal pay and what that's done in terms of confidence for women in all sectors, not just within football, to actually stand up and say, no, this is not right and we're not going to stand for it. And that momentum is so important. And the role models that you've become as a result of that are just as important. Do you feel the weight of that in any way, or is that something that you can then impart onto your teammates over here and make sure that everybody feels empowered to do the same thing?
I definitely think that there is a responsibility to being in a position that I'm in, where I do have the experience with pushing the game. I feel like that is something I should kind of constantly be being addressing wherever I am. And I think that a lot of the girls here are very aware of that as well. And we've had some conversations. Man City has been so wonderful. I have nothing but good things to say, but I do think that just even knowing the history of the game here and where there might be areas for improvement at, especially some places around the league that I've traveled to, I think is an interesting conversation and one that I think we all should be having. At the same time, of course, I think the WSL is moving in the right direction and I'm so proud to be playing here. But like you said, I think that having those conversations is really important and can be very eye-opening if people haven't thought about it as much as maybe other countries or leagues have.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's a case of people not necessarily not thinking about it, but just not have been given a voice in the past, perhaps. And I wondered whether you can ever see football in this country starting to pay equally in terms of competition prize money. It's something that we've talked about before on Women's Football Weekly, and it's something that comes up, and unfortunately, apart from on shows like this, only tends to come up on days like International Women's Day, whereas for us, International Women's Day is every day. But can you see that actually happening in this country at some point?
Well, I don't know enough about it here. Obviously, I have a lot more experience with how we do things in the US, but I think that something interesting I've been having conversations about lately is just organizations paying equally on principle and not just because they feel like publicly they need to, or because they got in trouble for not doing so. I feel like paying equally is a value. And I think that's something that people, like, we often hear organizations pointing to other reasons why they pay the way they do. And this could be discrimination in any form. And so I feel like equality becoming one of those forefront values is really key in this conversation. And I don't know enough about it here to really comment, but that's something that we've talked about a lot in the US.
Really fascinating chat with Manchester City and US Women's National Team star Sam Mewis about a wide-ranging bunch of issues. This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport. Usually, we'd be saying goodbye to you at this time of night, but as it's International Women's Day, we're actually with you for another hour, you lucky things, so don't go anywhere, especially because joining us in the next hour is Brighton boss Hope Powell and Sheffield United's Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. This is Women's Football Weekly on Talk Sport 2. You're listening to a special two-hour edition of the show. I'm Faye Carruthers. It is International Women's Day, a time where we challenge inequality, call out bias, question stereotypes and address all forms of gender inequality, as well as celebrating the achievements and all-round awesomeness of amazing women all around the world. Now, as I said to you earlier on, we do that all the time here on Women's Football Weekly, so this is just a normal day to us. However, we are taking it as an opportunity to have a two-hour special and talk to you about the amazing things going on in the women's game at the moment. And alongside me for the second part of the show, it's a very, very warm welcome to Brighton manager and former England head coach Hope Powell, making her debut on Women's Football Weekly. How are you, Hope?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Listen, we're delighted to have you. We've been wanting to chat for this long, for a long time. And obviously, especially good, we can talk to you after Brighton's third win in a row.
Yeah, it's a lot easier when we win. So, yeah, happy to have the chat.
Excellent stuff. Sheffield United's Courtney Sweetman-Kirk is with us as well. A stalwart now on Women's Football Weekly. How are you, Courtney?
Good evening. I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Yes, very good, thank you. Listen, we've already had a packed first hour of the show and I'm really interested to get both of your insights into the stuff that we've got coming up, talking about grassroots, talking about fans and some amazing innovations that there are in the women's game. But we held off, Hope, on talking about the final WSL match of this week's round, Brighton 2, Tottenham 0, because we wanted to talk to you especially about it. Your third consecutive victory, as I said, perhaps inspired by Anessa Kagman as well, a fantastic brace from the Netherlands international. She was so impressive in that match, Hope.
Yeah, she's a great player, great addition to our team, and really thankful, you know, to have her as part of the group. An inspiring win, absolutely delighted. I think especially, you know, we played so badly a few weeks ago against Bristol, which was a real low for everybody, and just really worked hard to turn things around. And obviously beating Chelsea was a massive achievement. Then we go on and do well against West Ham, win the game. And then yesterday, you know, to get the treble, 9 points, 3 games, is everybody's just really in a good place. So really feels good at the moment.
That's a record, isn't it, for Brighton in the WSL, if I understand rightly?
Well, 2 games in a row was a record. So we broke last week's record with 3. We're going to try and make it 4, you know, in our next league game. But yes, it's a record as it stands at the moment.
And it's interesting you mentioned that Bristol City game, because it feels as if that has exactly spurred you on to win that treble of games. And important almost that you have wake-up calls like that, perhaps, in the course of a season.
You don't really want them. It's not something that you want to go through regularly, but that was a real low point, I think, for everybody in terms of what we're trying to achieve as a club, what players are trying to achieve individually and collectively. And it was just not who we want to be or what we're about. So it gave us, you know, quite a severe jolt. There were some uncomfortable conversations that needed to be had. And the girls were, you know, absolutely magnificent, took the responsibility, owned it. And then basically, I just said, we're going to just start again. And the response has been tremendous, players and staff. And it's really kicked us on. But obviously, we want to maintain the good work that we've done going forward and not hit that low point again. It's not pleasant. And the league is so unforgiving and how quickly things can change. So it's really important that we stay focused for the remainder of the season. We want to continue striving forward and doing as well as we can.
Yeah, well, you're certainly a joy to watch when you're in this vein of form. And I was so pleased to see that you became the first woman to win the LMA's Performance of the Week award after that 2-1 win over Chelsea as well, ending that 33 unbeaten WSL record of theirs. That was quite a big moment, because this is the first time, isn't it, that WSL coaches have been included in this?
Yeah, well, it was very new to me. I thought it was something that they actually just introduced something new into the women's game Performance of the Week. So I was, oh, right, that's good. But then obviously when I understood that it was Performance of the Week, both men and women's football, I mean, that's a real accolade, not just for myself, but more importantly for the players and their response and all the staff. You know, everybody works so tirelessly. And when you... you know, do the unexpected. You know, I don't think anybody would have expected us to beat Chelsea. We're in such a rich vein of form, you know, that their squad is unbelievable. But I think on that day, we had to perform. You know, it wasn't necessarily about winning. It was about performance. And I think my last words to the girls on that day was just don't lose the game. And, you know, we had a bit of luck. We rode our luck. We were very, very organised, disciplined, resolute defensively. We knew we wouldn't have much of the ball, you know, and we stood up and, you know, a bit of luck and we go on and win the game. So it was absolutely fantastic. But I must say the girls, you know, it was all down to the players and their response, you know, to the Bristol game. So, yes, I got the award, but really it was about everybody.
Oh, that's the sign of a leader, that is, taking all the attention away from themselves and giving it to the players. It's really, really important. Now, I want to talk to you both about what we're focusing on in this second part of the show, because we're going to kick things off with grassroots women's football and coaching. We're talking about the wider women's game in general, really, what the pandemic has done, but the growing fan bases and the positivity around it at the same point, and some of the technology that's going to be driving change for players and managers in the future. But we'll start off with the grassroots game, because we chatted to Jess Keating from Gold Diggers and Charlotte Jukes from Victoria Park Vixens, which are both London-based grassroots women's teams, about how the pandemic has impacted them and what they're doing to kind of try and continue growing their teams.
It was disappointing in that we really had just started building the momentum in Vixens, at least. We'd kind of been a team for about a year and a half. We'd started doing well in games. And I think when the first lockdown was announced, it was a bit of a, okay, this is a bit of a shock and we're not sure where we go from here. We had some team members who moved abroad, moved back to their families, and we actually lost parts of the team as a result of COVID. I think we were, yeah, primarily worried about the loss of momentum and, you know, how people felt and if people felt as connected as they were. And we were quite worried about, you know, sort of teammates who perhaps were living on their own as well.
There are people that haven't renewed their membership. For example, we've had some members that are suffering with long COVID, so they've kind of stepped back from football because they have to do that.
There are pitches, they're limited, but they're booked out for silly amounts of time. Someone will have a pitch booking for 2 years for often a men's team. And it will often be this sort of revolving door situation where the groundsman's friends with the guy who runs the club, who's friends with everyone else. And it's just so difficult. And it's so frustrating because we have like 40 members who want to have a space to play football, who deserve a space to play football, because a lot of our team members actually just lost the opportunity to play football when they got to the age of 15, 16, and then it came to, well, are you going to be a professional footballer? No, okay, there's not a space for you to play casually, and there's not a space for you to actually be, if you want to be, mediocre at football.
Goldingers lost a lot of income in the past year through the pandemic. We usually run a quarterly club night in East London called Murder on the Dance Floor. And that brought in the majority of our fundraising. That meant that we could pay our coaches and we could keep the costs of football as low as possible for our members, because like we want football to be available regardless of people's financial situations. So we've had to be a bit more creative. Basically what we wanted the shirt to represent and kind of teach people about is the history of women's football in England. So it marks 1921, which is when the FA banned women's football for 50 years. So in effect, the women's game is 50 years behind, you could argue, the men's game at least. And that century, I just think, is really important to shine light on.
When we had the Women's World Cup, there was this real big vacuum of brand interest, momentum, hype around the women's game, but that dropped off very, very quickly. And we noticed it. You know, we sort of had brands who were really interested in collaborating, but it was only for that month. And we were thinking, well, actually, women's football isn't a fad. We're not going to be here for a month and then disappear. We're going to be here for as long as we can be here. And we want to work with people who are on that wavelength rather than seeing it as a tick box exercise. I do believe that brands across the board are now looking at women's football once again. You know, it's a business opportunity. The growth of the game is absolutely exceptional, you know, in terms of sponsorship at the very top levels, that we have an opportunity at the grassroots level to really kind of match that interest. And once again, it's such a big audience. You have girls, you know, girls leagues all over the country. You have women's leagues that are now popping up everywhere. If you're a brand, you want to be part of those, and you don't want to be the brand that's sort of left behind.
Really interesting stuff there. Thank you to Jess Keating from Gold Diggers and Charlotte Jukes from Victoria Park Vixens for sharing your stories. This is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. Hope Powell, Brighton manager, and Courtney Sweetman-Kirk from Sheffield United Women with us tonight. Interesting there, Hope, that Jess was talking about the shirt that they've designed, a commemorative shirt highlighting 100 years since women's football was banned here. And you're actually on the front of that shirt as a pioneer in the women's game, and it's so crucial that people know the history, isn't it?
It's really important. I think especially for those young girls that have an opportunity to become full-time athletes, full-time footballers, I think they need to understand the sacrifices that went before. It is so different now to what it was 10 years ago, let alone 50 years ago, let alone 100 years ago. So I think it's really important that we celebrate the history, and, you know, every female player, young and old, is aware of what came before. It's important to keep the game and those memories alive, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Courtney would probably echo that, wouldn't you, in terms of the younger girls coming up through the game. Do you make sure that they realise the challenges that you had to face?
Yeah, certainly. Unfortunately, I'm one of the older ones in the dressing room.
I didn't
room
want to say day, that, so. But I alluded enough to it.
Yeah, definitely. So it's letting them know sort of, you know, where we've come from, and you know, there's the days where you're paying to play and you're paying your subs, and yeah, now, you know, fortunately and so fortunately, my sort of generation has been on a journey where we've got through that and we're getting paid to play, which is unbelievable. So they need to know that and where it's come from to sort of, you know, understand how, you know, I say lucky they are in a sense, but also I think we're a generation of wanting to leave the game in a much better place than what we found it, and the growth obviously over the last 10-15 years it has been exceptional, and it's making sure that, you know, they want to take that forward as well. It's not a case of just turning up and now it's a job that's professional and that's great and then they leave it where it is. It's now up to that generation coming through to push it on to the next level again.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important, because the last thing on earth you want to do is lose any kind of momentum when players start to become a little bit complacent with what they've got and not quite realise the sacrifices that had to be made to get them there in the first place. You're listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers. Alongside me, Brighton boss Hope Powell and Sheffield United's Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. We're going to continue this conversation about grassroots football, as well as focusing on the most important part of the women's game. That's you, the fans.
Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2.
Well, this is a new track, Flo Lloyd Hughes, coming into Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the only show on national radio dedicated to women's football. I'm Faye Carruthers. Alongside me this evening is Hope Powell and Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. Don't forget, if you miss any of our shows or you want to listen again, our podcast is available on the TalkSport app, so you can download it today and just go to our podcast section. Now, we were talking specifically about grassroots football just there, hearing some really interesting stories about some teams in London. And, you know, I want to talk very briefly with both Courtney and Hope about how important the investment is in grassroots, but particularly academies, Hope, because we had your CEO Paul Barber on earlier on, and obviously Brighton are doing incredible things at the moment, which, you know, is keeping the game sustainable, making sure it's accessible to as many young girls as possible. And the actual academy could reopen during lockdown now it's met elite protocols. How important is that investment?
I think we have to appreciate that those players that play for England, playing the WSL, all those top flight footballers that you see globally, all came from grassroots football. They all started somewhere. And it's really important that young girls have somewhere where they can go and play and develop and become those stars of the future. So the investment is crucial. And I feel very, very privileged at Brighton that the owner, the chief executive, all value football in the community, number one, and more importantly, allowing and making sure that football is accessible to all boys and girls. And the investment at Brighton has been huge. The club with our academy and our RTCs now certainly returned this week, our RTCs. And that is because all the protocols have been put in place. That's all been driven by the club to allow those young girls to return. So without the investment, that doesn't happen. Without accessibility, those stars you see today, they do not get the opportunity to develop and become, you know, the athletes, the footballers that everybody sees on the TV in the World Cup. So really, really important.
An opportunity is a key word there, because we've spoken about this a lot on Women's Football Weekly. And last week, TalkSport spoke to QPR Academy coach Manisha Taylor, who's one of the few South Asian women's coaches working within men's football. She was telling us about the pipeline for coaches and players and says diversity and representation is the critical issue.
Where's the representation along that elite pathway for young girls? How many black girls do we have that are on the edge of, you know, playing in the Super League? How many South Asian girls do we have playing in the Super League in terms of real representation of people of colour within the elite pathway, whether that's on the field or off the field? But I think where we've really moved on is there's greater opportunity for girls to play football, which is brilliant.
That's exactly what you were saying, Hope. The opportunity for young girls to play football is really important. We talked last week a lot about, you know, the fact that within London in particular, a lot of there weren't any hubs for youngsters to train at, and that was perhaps one of the reasons why there wasn't as much representation in the England squads that we see now. But that is changing with the FA, isn't there? I mean, I know that you're involved in an elite coach placement program along with the PFA, with the likes of Rachel Yankee, Farrah Williams and Mary Phillip, among others, that you're looking after and bringing through. And bringing through coaches is just as important as bringing through players.
Yeah, it's actually with the FA that's being driven. I think, you know, I spent many hours with Manisha, and I think everybody recognises that the opportunity for certainly young black girls who then become the next generation of black female coaches, the opportunities and accessibility isn't as easy as it once was. So I think what's happened over the last 10 years, while the game's being developed and, you know, we look at venues and we want venues that meet a certain criteria, you look at those centres, the RTCs and the academies who are now aligned and attached to a club. So if you look at those, like the big London clubs, Arsenal, Chelsea, Fulham, to access their facility, you're talking about going out of London. You know, if I look at Chelsea, you have to go all the way to Cobham. It's not easily accessible for those inner city kids. So because of that, the consequence of that is you're going to get dropout. Parents can't afford to send their kids into leafy suburbia. You know, haven't got the time, haven't got the transportation. So naturally, some of the inner city kids who aren't as wealthy perhaps will be excluded. So I think the FA are now working on something else to make the opportunities more accessible for those inner city kids. And hopefully that will attract more people of colour, more players of colour. Because definitely, you know, where I am at Brighton, you know, our RTC and our academy is at our main training venue, which isn't easy for a lot of inner city kids. We get some kids from London to access. So it's, as well as opportunity, it's accessibility. How easy is it for these kids and parents to get to these venues? Not easy.
No.
And that's something that really has to be addressed. Otherwise, you're going to see there will be no generation of black young girls coming through and representing their country and then going on to coach, you know, at the elite level.
And this is the other important thing is visibility, because you need to have role models as well. And if we're not doing this now, who are these girls going to be able to aspire to who look like them? You know, Courtney's absolutely trailing a blaze or blazing a trail, even, should I say, on in the broadcasting space. You know, I've been working in broadcasting for 20 years and didn't really have any role models within broadcasting to look to. Now, there are so many more women, that young girls who want to come into broadcasting, want to come into coaching, want to go into playing football, have. And it's vital that we keep that visibility, Courtney, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's something that, a saying that I've heard, you know, quite a few people say, if you can't see it, you can't be it. And, you know, there will always be sort of, you know, trailblazers and people that never take no for an answer. But we've got to look at those majorities and you know, have people out there that you can see on the television. For me, obviously, recently, I'm looking at Alex Scott. Luckily, I'm, you know, quite close to Sue Smith, played with her at Doncaster. So, as you say, I've had those role models. But I think the more role models we have in those positions, the better. And I think especially not just within, you know, necessarily coaching or playing, but within those roles within clubs as well, you know, CEOs and within every company, because when that becomes more normalised, then, you know, young girls will be looking up thinking, yes, I can do that job, and I want to have a day, you know, where maybe there's a female co-coms and we're not commenting going, oh, she's good because, and she's great. And I don't normally like female co-coms or comments like that, that the backhanded compliments that you get. For me, if the better and more normalised things can get in terms of, yeah, it's a women's co-coms and that's it and that's normal, and we can get that across, you know, as many broadcasters as possible, whether that's BBC, Sky, BT, TalkSport, I think that's what we all need to aim for. And the more that people can see it, the more that they'll feel encouraged to know that there's a pathway there. And I think it's with women's football, it's quite interesting with the pathway at the moment. And we've almost had to go, not backwards in the sense that, not that we're going backwards, but we've had to focus on the elite level so much, and rightly so, and put that up on a pedestal and get the sponsorship to be able to then that trickle down, whereas normally you'd probably do it the other way around. You build the foundations, you build that up, and then you get to that elite level. So I think it's the way it's had to have been done currently, but it's also quite difficult, and as Hope says, unfortunately, with the advances in terms of the protocols and the standards of training and training grounds that we've had to get to that point. Unfortunately, now there's a dropout of young girls, you know, in inner city that maybe can't access that. And I, you know, remember for me, I grew up in the city in Leicester, and, you know, at one point my mum didn't drive, and I was luckily that I had a local club to go to, because if I didn't, I wouldn't have been able to get there. So I think the access is so important.
It certainly is. And, you know, it's important as well for the fans to be able to access. And we will talk about the fans later on in the programme. Coming up, though, on Women's Football Weekly, we're going to be discussing tech and some amazing innovations coming in to the women's game. You've been listening to the thoughts of Bryson Boss and former England head coach Hope Powell and Courtney Sweetman-Kirk of Sheffield United Women. We'll be back with you shortly.
TalkSport 2, official broadcast partner of the English Football League. Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2.
You are listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers, and keeping you company with me is Bryson manager and former England head coach Hope Powell and Sheffield United's Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. Now then, we're going to talk about technology. A big thing everywhere nowadays, obviously, but now becoming a big thing within women's football as well. And I'm delighted to speak to Laura Youngson, who's co-founder of Ida Sports, creators of the first women-specific football boots. Hello, Laura. How are you doing? Tell us a little bit more about how this came about. Was it female players asking for a specific design?
Well, it actually started with me. I always had to wear kids' boots when I played. And then I started asking around, and pretty much everyone was wearing kids and men's boots. Went and researched it, realised that women's and men's feet are different, and then looked around and saw that the bigger brands weren't really catering to the women's market. So I went and designed shoes, made them in my kitchen, first of all, and then, got into full production.
Wonderful. So what did you actually have to take into account?
So it's really kind of mind-blowing for me that there are these quite fundamental differences between men's and women's feet. kind of some of the big ones that people might experience. So women in general tend to have narrower heels. We tend to have a different length to width ratio. So where our little toes rub on the boots is different. We tend to have higher arches, and we also tend to pressure load differently. So what that means is, because our hips are set slightly further apart, where we bend and how we move really has an impact on what footwear we should be wearing.
Wow, that's fascinating. Courtney, have you ever thought about having a female specific boot? Have you ever had any problems with your boots that you thought you'd like to get resolved?
Well, I have quite narrow feet, so I've always gone with Adidas because I found that the most comfortable for me, and I have struggled with other brands that I've tried because they've just, you know, been too big. I'm sort of size 5'6", so fairly small feet. But I find that really interesting in terms of the pressure points, and obviously there's a lot been done in terms of hip placement and ACL. So it'd be very interesting to see in terms of how the boots maybe might minimise injury risk as well.
Yeah, it's a really, it's a fascinating question, one that we've started looking into, because I think there's so little research and data on this topic. You kind of get to a certain point and then there's just nothing. There's no data about women in this space. So we've been working with a lot of the universities in the UK and overseas in Australia to really kind of start looking into this question, and if it looking at the connection really between surface and boot, and are there things that can be done or taken into account to reduce the risks associated with injury.
Hope, can you see that would be something that you might want to bring in at Brighton, if you could see that there was a genuine, you know, if there was some proper research done and you could see that it would make a genuine difference in terms of injuries?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's all about choice, isn't it? To be given the opportunity to choose a boot that works for you, that could prevent injury, and not have to wear a so-called male boot that doesn't fit the, you know, the size of the foot, the pressure points, etc., that's been discussed, and more importantly, if it can prevent those very common injuries in women's football's ACLs, if that can be negated, then that would be brilliant. I think fantastic. Why not?
Excellent stuff. So just let us know how, you know, are you finding that there's a market for them, Laura?
Yeah, totally. So we launched our sports brand just before the entire world shut down.
Oh, great timing.
Yeah, perfect. But we've actually done really well. We've almost sold out our first run. We've launched primarily in Australia, and then we've been exporting into the US as well.
Amazing.
Just starting in the UK. But we're now working on other products and the next version of the shoe, and taking what we've learnt, putting that into a futsal shoe, so for indoors as well. I'm really starting to just, yeah, ask the questions. And as Hope said, it's, for us, it's about choice. And we know that for some players, they don't have the choice in the market. I'd say, Courtney, your feet are normal to me. So this is one misconception as well, that we encounter a lot of women who are like, oh, I've got really narrow feet, or really this feet or that feet. And actually, we think actually you've got very normal feet. And it's just that the boots haven't been made for you in the past.
Wonderful. Nobody panic. Everyone's got normal feet, okay? Yeah. Thank you, Laura. Much appreciated. Laura Youngston, co-founder of Ida Sports, creators of the first women's specific football boots. We look forward to seeing them hit our shores very soon, I'm sure. Listen, we're also going to talk, continuing our chat about tech, to Bart Hubey from Business Consultants LCP. They're the development partner for Transfer Lab, which is an online football scouting tool. How are you doing, Bart?
Hi, very well, thank you, Faye. Great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Great to have you on. Listen, when we've been discussing this before, I just want to get our listeners to understand a little bit more what data analytics are and what Transfer Lab is specifically, and what made you want to launch a women's version.
Great, okay. Well, data analytics, I think it's become a big thing in men's football in recent years. Lots of clubs are now using it as part of their recruitment process, some more successfully than others. I saw the Moneyball thing, and what we've developed with Transfer Lab, we've been working with a leading football analytics consultancy, Analytics FC, and we've developed this platform. It's that football clubs can subscribe to get information on player performance. It's now used in the men's game by clients in 11 countries with 5 Premier League teams. But we haven't really until now had the data in order to apply it to the women's game, which we've been wanting to do for some time. But our data providers are a firm called YScout, who do football videos, but they also provide us with events data. And we've now got enough data that we can launch the new platform for the women's game in 2 weeks' time.
That's amazing. I mean, data collection has always been very problematic. Just finding stuff on women's football just even a couple of years ago was nigh on impossible. Whereas now it does seem as if there's a lot more data out there. I just want to bring Hope Powell into this because I'm wondering whether or not this is something that you'd be interested in terms of scouting, Hope.
Yeah, well, we use the platform Y-Scout to access data and player information. I think that area, certainly with recruitment, is growing. The demands for knowing players, whether they're home or abroad, and knowing as much detail about the player is growing. So any information, certainly, you know, when we're recruiting, the more information we can get on a player, the better. And I know that it's an area that's really growing. You know, it's there in the men's game and it's definitely growing in the women's game. So I think anything that helps make an informed choice about players is of benefit, and something that obviously we use data, as I said, we use Y-Scout. We look at anything that we think could add value in that area.
I'm sure Courtney would like to know, Bart, whether or not it's something that helps players as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's primarily used by clubs to help in their recruitment, but also I think from a player's perspective, it can help in a couple of ways. I think first of all, it can support players and their agents. So on the one hand, you might be looking at clubs, looking at players, but players also looking to sort of move up the scale of football clubs, can want to present themselves to clubs they might want to move to at a higher level in a positive way, and Chancellor Lab can certainly help with that. And also it can help looking at their strengths and weaknesses, because the data, it can mislead, but it never lies. So it can help players to look to where to focus their development and training.
Yeah, just finally, Bart, how do we know that this works? What have you done so far to kind of prove that your data is valuable and correct?
That's a very good question, Faye. And I had a little bit of trepidation when we put this, because we've got relatively little data historically compared to the men's version. But we do something called a best 11. So we look at we can look at who are the highest rated players in the Super League. And we've done that just now. We've put that out on LinkedIn. And we're really pleased that the players coming out from the analytics are definitely some of the very best players. And in fact, I think the two of the players you've had on the show today, Jen Beattie and Sam Lewis, ought to come out in that best 11. So we think that proves that the analytics really do work.
Wonderful stuff. That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Bart. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Great to be on the show.
That's Bart Hubie there from Business Consultants LCP, the development partner for Transfer Lab, which is an online football scouting tool. In 2 weeks' time, they're going to be releasing a women's version. Just to quickly wrap this up, some really interesting innovations going on within the women's game at the moment, Hope. And again, that's talking about opportunity again. And, you know, the fact that people are normalising women's football and starting to bring these fantastic innovations out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, 10, 15 years ago, certainly when I played, it's a night and day. And these innovations that are specifically lending themselves to the women's game is really, really impressive. It's really shifted. But I think you've got to compliment the game, the product itself. It's now desirable. More people want to watch it. You know, commentators are being normalised, Karen Carney doing really well, Alex Scott, it's becoming normal. And more importantly, I think the enjoyment factor, you know, more people are watching women's football because actually the level of skill and the product is desirable. And with that, you get the commercial and the marketing buy-in and the interest. So long may this continue.
Yeah, certainly. And as you say, the commercial and the branding, it is a vital part of that as well. And that is starting to come on board. It's something we talk about regularly here on Women's Football Weekly. Right, this is Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2. I'm Faye Carruthers. You've just been listening to the thoughts of Brighton boss Hope Powell. Courtney Sweetman-Kirk of Sheffield United is with us as well. Next up, I promised you fans, we will be bringing you fans.
On DAB+, online, via the TalkSport app and on your smart speaker. Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the home for women's football. Women's Football Weekly with Faye Carruthers on TalkSport 2.
Yeah. You are listening to Women's Football Weekly on TalkSport 2, the UK's only national radio show dedicated to women's football, with me, Faye Carruthers, alongside Brighton manager Hope Powell and Sheffield United's Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. Now then, last week, it was very remiss of me. I always give you the championship scores. And last week, I was talking so much to Angerad James and to Erin Cuthbert that we completely ran out of time. So apologies for that. The championship scores are as follows. Crystal Palace lost 1-0 to Liverpool. London Bees beaten 7-0 by Leicester City. Charlton drew 1-1 with Lewis. Blackburn lost 2-0 to Durham. And Coventry were 1-0 winners over London City Lionesses with an amazing goal from Hayley Crackle. That leaves the table as such. So Leicester still top of the table on goal difference with a game in hand over Durham, who are level on points with them on 38. So it looks at the moment, I know you didn't play yesterday, Courtney. Sheffield United 10 points behind the top two there, but it's so tight this season, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's credit to the league, and it's made it really exciting. It's just such a shame that we've not been able to obviously have the fans in the stadium to share that. But I think, you know, where we're at and being realistic with our budget compared to, you know, the likes of Leicester, Liverpool and Durham that are full-time and a budget, we, you know, I think there's times where we've been disappointed and felt like we could have done better. But, you know, if we're being very realistic and honest with ourselves, it's, you know, it's probably not been a bad season, but we're always looking to improve and looking to finish as high up in the table as possible. We've still got to play Durham and Liverpool, which is obviously a massive game. So, you know, we'll take what we need from that. We want to have done better, but I think going into next season, obviously Neil Redfern came into the role quite late. I missed all of pre-season and the first few games of obviously the pandemic changed the dynamic as it did with such a lot. So I think with a full pre-season behind us, hopefully next season it'll be a different one.
Hope Powell, do you think there's an argument with the strength of the championship in particular this season that we could perhaps see an extended WSL in the future?
I think that will come. I think with more and more clubs investing, so long as it's sustainable, I think that will come definitely in the future.
Yes, sustainability is huge, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, yeah, as I said, I think that will happen going forward.
Right, now continuing our look at the wider women's game, we're going to hear from some fans of Norwich, Leicester and Southampton about how they believe their emerging and rising women's sides can now grow their support.
At Norwich, the women's team has been around for quite a long time now, but it's only over the last couple of years that I'd say the club and the sort of men's fans have become more aware of the women's team. They now have their own dedicated home, which is up at the Norwich Community Sport Foundation, where they're playing their games on a regular basis when they can play. But the thing that's interesting about the Norwich men's and women's team, a bit probably like Southampton, is the men's team are quite high up and the women's team are not quite high up just yet. But that's been a real focus over the last couple of years to bring a new coach in, to have more interactions between the men's coaching and the women's coaching. But then I think from a fan's perspective, what we're trying to change is actually just building up that awareness of the women's team out with the fan base of the men's team. I think there's very, very little awareness. Like when I started working with the women's team over the last couple of months, even my kids said, "What do you mean Norwich have a women's team?" And, you know, they've been Norwich fans for years. So I think there's a huge amount of people out there who don't know.
I think right now the club is doing a pretty good job because you see them tweeting things about the men's side the women's side and advertising for the women's side as well on their men's account. But you can tell that there's really a restriction on how we can see the games, like our past two matches. So prior to our league game last weekend, we had not been able to watch them in the league for 7 weeks because of postponements. And then it was not live streamed. And you kind of look at these other matches, like there were championship games today that were streamed, but ours was not, and we're top of the table. So it's kind of shocking. You see so many people now engaging with our women's side saying like, "I really want to watch them," because I'm in so many group chats with so many people who just started following the women's team this season. So I was sitting there hounding them like, "You guys got to follow him. Like, look at how well we're doing." And so many people are wanting to watch these games, but it's just so hard. And like, obviously it's hard for me to make it over there, but for the fans that are over there, I really hope things clear up soon so that we can get fans in the stands, because I know how badly people are wanting to go support them now, especially with how great they're doing.
It's really encouraging as a fan. I think from sort of like the page I run, like the fan base page, we've seen a lot of encouragement for younger people. In the FA Cup, Southampton had a record-breaking run they'd never got so far in the competition. They met Coventry and they played at St Mary's. So that was the first time the women's side had actually played at the stadium for Southampton. And that was a record-breaking crowd. I think that was really great to see because, you know, there are people that want to watch the game. And it's very encouraging.
The pause hasn't obviously been ideal, but it allows us to reset and maybe showcase the team more through to the men's fan base and build up that interest. Like, we've all been locked in, not seeing sport, live sport in person for months. So I think that there's a huge appetite for people who want to go out and watch something. So in a way, it's kind of a huge opportunity to start using social media and some of the things Stephen and Hannah mentioned to like build up interest and get excitement going and saying, look, the women's team are here and playing. Come and watch this game.
Really interesting insight from Sarah Greaves from the Norwich Supporters Trust, Leicester City fan Hannah Whelan, and Southampton content creator Stephen White. Thank you all of you for chatting to us. And growing fan bases, Hope Powell, is such an important thing, isn't it? And how we try and get that back after this pandemic, not losing the World Cup momentum. But of course, we have got home Euros next year that might help that.
Yeah, that will definitely help. I think I'm really optimistic, though. I think the fans that were fans before will definitely come back because it's been a long time coming. So I think those fans are still there. I have no doubt about that. And I think with the home Euros, when there is a major tournament, the fans always come out. International football is a real seller. I think you mentioned it previously, that it's generally after those major tournaments that the fan base starts to dwindle. That's happened over many, many years. And that's the bit, perhaps, where, you know, some work needs to be done in getting those fans that go and watch international football to come out and watch women's football week in, week out. That is the challenge, I think, for the women's game.
I think we've started to see that a little bit, you know, particularly with young girls being taken by their families.
Yeah, more so. But if you look at the numbers that go to international matches, you talk about 15,000, and then a domestic game, you might get anything between 500 and maybe 3,000. But, and you know, when it's opened up to the male stadiums, we've had the 24,000. But it's we're talking about getting this week in, week out. Mm. That is the challenge for the women's game at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, when it goes to a big stadium, you know, Man City, the Amex, you know, you get that 20,000. It goes back into their home stadium, which is a smaller stadium. You never fill it. So I think that's the challenge for the women's game.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And staging matches at men's stadium, we've seen that works. It's just it's not possible to do that week in, week out, obviously for cost reasons. But, you know, hopefully that can start to build momentum again for sure. And then those fans start to stay when women's teams go back to where they usually play. Listen, we've run out of time, which is really unfortunate. Just a tiny bit of housekeeping, by the way, because I don't want anyone to think I've missed anything. But we've got midweek Champions League round of 16, second legs. Manchester City 3 goals up on Fiorentina and Chelsea 2 up on Atletico Madrid as well. And Northern Ireland, by the way, drew Ukraine for that Euro 2022 playoff. Games are going to take place between the 7th and 13th of April. Hope Powell, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I hope you've enjoyed your debut on Women's Football Weekly and you'll come back again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Really enjoyed it and love to come back. Thank you for the invite.
Wonderful, wonderful. We will speak to you soon. Courtney Sweetman-Kirk, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thank you very much. I'm off to watch the Bristol game now, Bristol Reading.
Yes, 8:15 kickoff indeed. Looking forward to that one. Thank you so much. Next week, we'll have another packed Women's Football Weekly show for you. But thank you today to our amazing lineup of guests. Jem Beattie, Molly Hudson, Sam Mewis, Paul Barber, Laura Youngson, Bart Hubie, Courtney Sweetman-Kirk, and of course, Hope Powell. And all of you, as ever, for listening. We couldn't be here without you. Don't forget, if you do miss any of the show or you want to listen back to any of our specials, you can download the Women's Football Weekly podcast via the TalkSport app.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.